It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we check in on how food banks in Wisconsin and the people they serve are doing at this point, months into the pandemic. First, it's the week in Washington, where we take a look at some of the nation's top political stories. We're on day three of confirmation hearings for President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Talks for additional stimulus legislation continue after mixed messages from the president. And we're just under 3 weeks away from Election Day, with a deadly pandemic continuing to have a major impact on the race. And here, there may not be a debate this week as initially scheduled, but there is still an opportunity to see both candidates, either of them, I guess, on TV in primetime tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you planning to watch the second presidential debate? Did you have more you wanted to learn or see after the last one? Are you planning to watch these two town halls on different major TV networks? Will you watch simultaneously? Build your own debate? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Adam Wolner is a political editor for McClatchy, focusing on the 2020 presidential race. He hails originally from Grafton, Wisconsin. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, good to have you back in Wisconsin. Now, the president returned in person to the campaign trail this week, earlier than expected based on the timing of his announcement of being diagnosed with COVID-19 and CDC guidelines for quarantining. What is he doing, and what have we heard from his doctors about whether it's okay?
Yeah, he's trying to the best of his ability to get back to normal here now that we're less than 3 weeks out from the election. You know, despite his relatively recent COVID diagnosis, returning to the campaign trail here with a pretty busy schedule. You know, he's had a rally scheduled every day so far this week, and will continue to do that here through the weekend. According to his doctor, you know, he said that he is no longer contagious, has since tested negative for coronavirus, so says that it is safe for him to be out here and doing rallies. Of course, you know, it's difficult to ignore that at a lot of these rallies that we've seen so far in Florida and in Pennsylvania, they are packing in a lot of attendees here. They may not be all that close to the president himself, but the attendees themselves are very closely packed to close to each other. You're not seeing a lot of social distancing, not seeing a lot of masks. And we've heard some public health experts raise some concerns there about that potentially spreading coronavirus here. But the way Donald Trump sees it, he's down in the polls here. Things are not going in the right direction. And from his perspective, staying in Washington, maybe resting up a little bit more isn't going to do him any good. He needs to get out there and rally his voters to get out and cast a ballot for him before November 3rd.
For both campaigns, where do we see the candidates showing up?
You know, really throughout the course of this campaign, there have really been sort of a core group of battleground states. You know, of course, there's the big three sort of in the Great Lakes area, Wisconsin being among them, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those three states that President Trump was able to take from the Democratic column after decades. That has really been the focus for both campaigns, Trump keeping those in his column, and for Joe Biden and the Democrats, flipping those back for both of them. You know, that's sort of the easiest way to get back to those 270 electoral votes you need in order to win. Of course, there are your traditional sort of perennial battleground states such as Florida, North Carolina, that have a lot of electoral votes up for grabs. And then you also have some states out west, such as Arizona, sort of a newly emerging battleground state there, where demographics are quickly changing in a state that used to be very reliably Republican, now looks to be a toss-up. Those have sort of been the core six throughout the campaign, and that's where you've seen both Biden and Trump put most of their resources in terms of ad spending, in terms of physical travel to those states. Of course, a lot of other states have sort of come onto the map and look like they may be competitive as well. Looking across the Midwest, you have states like Iowa and Ohio. Further south, states like Georgia and Texas. But really, it's going to kind of come down to those core six. And particularly, you know, in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, I think those are what a lot of members of both parties are looking at as the tipping point states for both candidates.
And candidates aren't just trying to mix things up based on geography. They're slicing and dicing demographically. You wrote a piece about appeals to Catholic voters in the United States. What did you see?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting group, given that, you know, normally if you take a look at Catholic voters as a whole, they often are fairly split politically, and when you specifically look at the white Catholic vote, they have leaned Republican in recent elections, but they particularly swung towards President Trump in 2016, and that's a group that is very prominent in states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. They make up a good chunk of the electorate there. But Joe Biden himself is Catholic and has really made an appeal that we haven't seen from a lot of Democratic presidential candidates in the past to these voters, and that's a group, you know. Even if he doesn't necessarily win them, doesn't win a majority of them, just making inroads into a group that really helped elevate Donald Trump 4 years ago could go a long way towards swinging the results in the Midwest.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Adam Olner is with us, political editor for McClatchy. He's focusing on the 2020 presidential race. So are we, at least at the outset here. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're still undecided, what do you want to hear from either or both candidates? Where do you think, if you want to play political strategist, where in the nation do you think the candidates should focus their attention? Your candidate, maybe? What groups should they be trying to appeal to? Do you wish we had two more debates as originally planned? Looks like they're not happening now. Do you plan to watch one or, through the power of tape delay, both of these town hall events tomorrow night? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, Adam, we were supposed to have a debate tomorrow night. We're not. They tried to change the rules to account for one of the candidates having had COVID-19 and do a virtual debate. President Trump declined. So now what are we getting tomorrow night?
So we're going to have some dueling town hall events here on NBC and ABC, Joe Biden from Philadelphia and Donald Trump from Miami. And so, you know, it certainly will present a bit of a challenge for voters that these town hall events are happening at the exact same time on the same night. So, as you mentioned, they may have to flip back and forth a little bit if they want to get a perspective from both of the candidates. But yeah, ultimately, following President Trump's coronavirus diagnosis, the Presidential Debate Commission tried to move that original debate that was scheduled for Miami tomorrow to a virtual event. Donald Trump's campaign declined to do that. And after those plans fell apart, we moved to these town halls. You know, I think there's sort of two ways to look at it. On the one hand, you know, voters won't get to see President Trump and Joe Biden on the same stage together, you know, sort of being able to hash out their differences as we saw a few weeks ago. But, you know, I think a lot of voters also saw that first debate as not being very productive with a lot of, you know, talking over each other and hurling insults and maybe didn't end up learning all that much about either of them. So maybe with this format, where the candidates are going to be taking questions directly from voters there, maybe we'll glean a little more insight into where the candidates are. But yeah, we're not going to get the typical three presidential debates that we normally get in a general election this time around.
Yeah, and a lot of people are looking at how this ended up happening with each of these town halls at exactly the same time on the same night and wondering if the media decisions here are serving the public as best they could.
Yeah. There's been some reporting out today about kind of the decision from the two separate networks, particularly from NBC, since ABC, which is hosting the Biden town hall, had already been scheduled in Miami. The NBC hosted town hall in Miami. They decided to go at the same time. But again, you know, I think, you know, the way that the media is distributed now, if voters really want to be able to see both events, that they'll be able to catch them one way or another, whether it's, you know, even if they can only watch one live, they can go and watch the video clips afterwards or the other, or read, you know, one of the many write-ups that I'm sure will be available this evening from newspapers across the country.
Outside of the race for president in election 2020, obviously a lot of other campaigns going on. What are some key races you are watching around the country right now?
Well, outside of the presidential race, you know, this is sort of played second fiddle, but, you know, the control of the Senate is very much up for grabs. And that's going to be very critical because, you know, if things go the way the polls are suggesting right now, and, you know, Joe Biden does ultimately win the presidency and Democrats are able to hold on, if not even expand their House majority, the results of that, that Senate majority could be critical. If Democrats are able to win the necessary seats, they could have full control of Washington by the time we get to 2021. A lot of competitive Senate races across the country, many of them are Republican-held seats, which is part of the reason why they're on defense here. You have some states out west in Arizona and Colorado where our Republican incumbents are in some really tough races. You look across the map to Iowa, Georgia, Maine, Montana, North Carolina, all of these Republican-held Senate seats that they're are really having some difficulty holding on to right now. And that's in large part because Democratic candidates across the country are just raising record-shattering amounts of money. I mean, really just unprecedented amounts of money for some of these Senate campaigns, allowing them to cut even into Republican-leaning states here in the following weeks. So it's going to be, a really important battle, even though, naturally the presidential race gets top billing and gets a lot of the attention. Which way the Senate goes this fall as well is going to have huge implications for, sort of what the federal government looks like in a few months.
We're talking to political editor Adam Wallner from McClatchy. It's The Week in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on tomorrow's non-debate. And coming up, we'll look at, yes, another effort, more talks about a possible COVID-19 stimulus package or relief package, big, small, none, somewhere in between. What do you want to see come out of the House, the Senate, and the White House when it comes to any kind of extended COVID-19 economic relief? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We're talking to political editor Adam Wallner from McClatchy again. You can continue the conversation. Join in coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Adam Wallner, political editor with McClatchy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you planning to watch either or both of the town halls airing at the same time tomorrow night with former Vice President Joe Biden, current President Donald Trump? Do you wish there were more debates? Are you happy there are no more debates? Should Congress tackle some stimulus? What should it look like, do you think? What would help you? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Sandra is with us in Mount Pleasant. Sandra, hi.
Hi. I won't watch President Trump because I'm going to say it honestly. He lies too much. Now he's changing in the last week on a dime about the stimulus and everything else just to gain votes. He's acting like the coronavirus is not dangerous. He received treatment that no one else will receive. He had mild symptoms, and apparently he got treatment that someone would have to be really almost on their deathbed to receive. And most people aren't going to be able to afford that kind of treatment. So to hear him lie and say, oh, yes, I've wanted a stimulus bill. Oh, don't worry about coronavirus.
Gotcha, Sandra. A lot to work with there, Adam. And let's focus on the stimulus now. As our caller mentioned, the president had said over the course of the last week, no stimulus until after the election, then focused targeted stimulus on, I think, airlines and a couple other specifics, and then go big or go home. He said he wanted bigger packages than either the House or Senate were currently looking at. How are those mixed messages playing out in Congress?
Right. About it, as you would expect here, that they're not really getting anywhere when they're getting those sort of mixed messages from the White House. Certainly in Congress, Republicans, Democrats were already going to have their fair share of differences to work through. But now that sort of the top kind of lieutenant in the White House responsible for negotiating this with House Democratic leadership in particular are seemingly getting new marching orders every day, it makes it difficult here to reach any sort of agreement with the election fast approaching. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said just today that it's looking very unlikely that they will reach any sort of agreement here before the election. And after the election, then, it's a brand new ballgame at that point, even though, the current administration in Congress will still continue to serve through January. The political dynamic will totally change in the lame duck once we have an idea of who won the presidency and who's going to control both chambers of Congress. So at this point, it's looking less and less likely that there's going to be any sort of significant stimulus deal here before the election.
Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Anita now in Grays Lake. Anita, hi. Anita, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to know for the debate on the 22nd, if Trump's people have agreed to the new rules for the debate or not.
Yeah, that is a good question, and I don't know the answer to that, Adam. Do you?
No, we don't yet. At the moment, that debate is also sort of still in flux. It's possible that could be potentially moved back. That, of course, at that point, we're not going to have much time because that following week after that debate is scheduled is when Election Day would take place. So at this point, that one is still very much up in the air. And I would imagine that the campaigns will be negotiating that with the debate commission once we kind of get on the other side of these Thursday night town halls and start looking forward into next week. So, as of right now, it is still scheduled. Whether or not the candidates will show up and what that actually looks like, that also needs to be worked out.
Thanks a lot for that call. Great question at 800-642-1234. Talking to Adam Wolner, political editor with McClatchy, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. Adam, let's turn to the other big story now, of course, the Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. What have you taken away so far over the last 3 days?
Yeah, well, it's certainly a unique set of circumstances where heading into the confirmation hearings, there isn't very much drama in terms of whether or not Amy Coney Barrett is actually going to become the next Supreme Court justice, unless, something really, major happens here over the course of the next couple of days. She certainly has the vote she needs in the Senate to be confirmed. Every Republican but two so far, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, have said that that they will vote to confirm her. And if for her not to get confirmed, you would need another two Republicans to vote against her, given the current makeup of the Senate, assuming all Democrats vote against her. And really, this fight has so much centered around the process and sort of the method by which she has been nominated rather than her actual qualifications itself. Because going into these hearings, we pretty much knew how every senator was going to vote based on whether or not they thought it was appropriate for the Senate to confirm a Supreme Court justice so close to the election. So certainly, this week with the hearings and from the questioning we've been getting from the senators has certainly been overshadowed by a lot of that. So far, you're getting sort of the usual line of conservative questioning from Senate Republicans. Senate Democrats are very focused on trying to keep healthcare at the fore. That's an issue they want to keep at the center of this election, trying to press her on her views on the Affordable Care Act in particular, because they're trying to anticipate it once she does join the court, if the future of the Affordable Care Act would potentially be in jeopardy. But yeah, otherwise, kind of devoid of drama in terms of whether or not she's actually going to be confirmed, which even in this, very partisan environment is not the norm for a Supreme Court nominee.
Let's go back to our callers. Mary is with us in Pewaukee. Mary, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me on. I did want to just say that I already voted. I would be watching Biden on the town hall meeting. There was a wonderful special last week with actually CNN, if I can say that on the air or
sure.
Bleep it out. But yeah, and it was wonderful because I got to know Biden and I got to know what all of his plans are for when he does win. And it looks like a blue tsunami. I say vote him out. The bullying, the interrupting, it's been an embarrassment. It's been, hard to take, and very stressful for, I think, all of us the citizens with the device.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. I've seen people throw around the phrase blue tsunami looking at the polling. I'm guessing neither party is going to look at the polls and put this one to bed just yet, Adam.
No. Even Democrats, who have certainly been happy with the news of the polling and a lot of the fundraising that we've seen, a lot of the fundamentals seem to be suggesting good news for Democrats. But they are certainly you know, not take anything for granted. The memory of 2016 still haunts them when Hillary Clinton also held a big lead in a lot of the polls heading into the election, and Donald Trump was able to pull off a big upset. A lot of reasons to think that the 2020 will be different, but Democrats in particular are urging their voters to cast those ballots early, whether by mail or at early voting locations. So yeah, certainly no one is ready to firmly predict what is going to happen on November 3rd. But I do think it is fair to say at this stage in the race, you'd probably rather be in Joe Biden's position than Donald Trump's.
Thanks a lot for that call. Adam, in our last minute or so, what are you watching for in the next week in national politics?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see as more of the early voting numbers come in, how much of an advantage Democrats are able to build going into the election day. Obviously, over the course of the last few months, a lot of states, Wisconsin included, you know, changed some of their rules to allow people to vote early or by mail due to the coronavirus pandemic. And that's something Democrats have really been pushing their voters to do, to cast their ballots as soon as possible, you know, request one by mail, go to an early voting location and get that vote banked. Whereas Republicans aren't pushing that as much and are really going to have to count on high turnout on election day itself in order to make up for those gains. So I'll be watching as those numbers continue to come in from states across the country in the coming days and weeks, how much of an advantage Democrats are able to build from the early vote and whether or not that is ultimately insurmountable for Republicans on election day.
Adam, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
That's Adam Molnar, political editor for McClatchy. We talked to them for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics, looking at the latest at on presidential campaigns, just under 3 weeks to go until Election Day. Coming up after the news, we'll find out how many people in Wisconsin are experiencing food insecurity at this stage of the pandemic and how food banks and relief agencies around the state are trying to meet the need. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll check in on how Wisconsin food banks are weathering an increase in demand during the COVID-19 crisis. First, WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is with us with more on the latest on a challenge to Governor Evers' statewide occupancy limit for Wisconsin restaurants and bars. Laurel, good to have you with us.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're in power rotation on NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio newscast. But let's expand a little bit on the stories we're hearing during our news here. Put this in context for us with the trends we're seeing in COVID-19 numbers in the state.
So we've obviously seen record-breaking days several times recently in Wisconsin. Yesterday, notably, we had the highest number of daily new cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic started, more than 3,200 cases. And then, of course, we also had a record number of deaths yesterday as well. So looking at those hard numbers, those are things that Governor Evers has pointed to when he's issued these new emergency orders for the state and these new restrictions. We've seen three different states of emergency from the governor over the course of the pandemic since March. And the second two states of emergency have been really controversial because this is something we haven't really seen before. After the 60-day emergency expires, a governor, you know, issuing another one related to the same thing. There's actually a legal challenge with a conservative advocacy group saying that the governor can't do that. And in the case of this latest order, it's actually a little bit different because it came from the State Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm instead of the governor. It's the Evers administration kind of trying to say, hey, we're recognizing these spikes. We think that we need to do something about it, but we're changing our approach a little bit to kind of thread this legal loophole and get these statewide restrictions in place without having to, you know, go to the state legislature, which has, you know, based on what public comments we've been able to get, had some opposition to the way that the governor has been handling things.
And talk us through the restrictions here. They're not to all indoor mm-hmm. gatherings. It seems like restaurants and bars are really at the top of the list for this occupancy limit.
Right. That's really kind of the marquee thing here is that restaurants and bars all across the state can only hit that 25% occupancy limit. What this is trying to do, though, more broadly, is limit gatherings in indoor spaces to limit those groups, you know, that public health experts have been talking about for several months now, not having a number of people in an indoor space where air is circulating differently, of course, than it does outdoors. And this order is set to be in effect or was until the court ruling this morning until November 6th. So this is something that the governor thought was really important as we're looking at these increases in cases kind of steadily over the past several weeks.
And what was the Tavern League's argument? I mean, obviously they're worried about the impact on their member businesses. What was their argument in a legal sense in front of this judge?
So it does get kind of wonky. I talked about the governor's administration kind of trying to thread that legal, thread the needle, I guess is the way to say it. When the state Supreme Court issued its ruling in May, striking down the administration's stay-at-home order, it left a small part of the code untouched that has to do with public health emergencies. They basically left aside language that allows the State Department of Health Services to restrict gatherings restrict groups of people at places like schools, for example. So the governor's administration is trying to legally issue its order based on that, kind of using that small bit of language that was untouched in the Supreme Court ruling. The Tavern League doesn't agree with that. It doesn't think that that's a fair thing for the Evers administration to do. It points to the rest of the state Supreme Court order, which said that if the governor and his administration wanted to issue any more restrictions from that point on, they needed to go through a process called the emergency rulemaking process, which is basically kind of the same thing as an emergency order, but has a very important difference in that it involves state lawmakers. They have to kind of introduce it sort of like a bill, and it goes through the committee hearing process and has to get that stamp of approval from lawmakers. And of course, we know there are strong Republican majorities in the legislature. So there's a bit of a hiccup there.
And briefly, Laurel, as we wrap up, mm-hmm. what's next now that this order is at least temporarily blocked?
So it is temporarily blocked. That's a really important thing to note. There's a hearing in the case on Monday where the administration will get to go forward and kind of make its arguments for why it thinks it was in the right to issue this ruling and why it should be put back in place. So we're going to keep a close eye on it, and we'll certainly cover those arguments on Monday for everybody.
Laurel, thanks a lot for bringing us up to speed.
Thanks, Rob.
Laurel White is WPR's state capitol reporter. She shared the latest on a challenge by the Wisconsin Tavern League to an occupancy limit for Wisconsin restaurants and bars. Now, while further economic stimulus and relief for Americans impacted by the coronavirus continues to be on hold in Washington, unemployment and other hardships related to the pandemic have made food assistance programs and pantries much more in demand. We're going to check in with some of the organizations helping people through food distribution operations, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you or is someone you know experiencing food insecurity now because of the pandemic? Have you been able to use a food pantry or food bank? Do you use Wisconsin's Food Share program? What's your experience been like? Do you work on the other side of things yourself, maybe in a local food pantry? Tell us what you're seeing. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Michelle Orgea is president and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rob.
And Patty Habeck is president and CEO of Feeding America, Eastern Wisconsin. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Michelle, what are you seeing from your member organizations when it comes to demand for food over the course of this pandemic?
You know, when the pandemic first hit, it was all hands on deck. We were already serving a lot of people. You know, there was 100,000 people in our service area of 16 counties in southwestern Wisconsin that were food insecure. And there's a projection of, and we're already seeing a 60% increase in food insecurity in our service area. That adds, you know, 60,000 more people to the group we were already hoping to serve. And our pantry partners and the mobile pantries that we provide food through, they're all seeing just record increases and so many people that have never used food assistance before needing help. And we're there for them. Our partner agencies are there for them. And it's we're trying to keep up. It's challenging. There's just a lot of need out there.
And Patty, similar story in your part of the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle and I work really closely together as we work across the state. And in eastern Wisconsin, we're seeing similar. We're seeing record increases, record demand, huge requests from our pantries for food from the food bank. And keeping up with that is incredible. 40% of the people that we're serving are first-time users of food, the hunger relief system as a whole. We're seeing a sustained 36% increase, which is, you know, an extra almost 200,000 people that we're serving out of the 400,000 we were already serving. So like Michelle said, those numbers are extraordinary and just can't be ignored. And so keeping up with that has been a challenge on the entire hunger relief system.
Michelle, I know early in the pandemic, it wasn't just the demand side, but the supply side of food distribution networks, production networks, they were, you know, disrupted at least at the outset by the pandemic. Is that still the case, or has that side of things started to settle down for food pantries?
You know, that was the big story, and we're not sure if that's going to, you know, with the increase in cases now with positive cases, we're not sure if that's going to hit again. We're actually just now getting some of the orders we placed back in March and April, and
wow.
And some things are just starting to settle down. But you know, we're not seeing those panicking, you know, order placing and competition for the food as much as we were then. But we're still wary. We're not sure what it's going to be. I mentioned that we're seeing a huge increase in need, and our goal is to meet that and to increase our distribution. But we're not going to see the same increase in donations of food, and the cost and the resources that we have to increase at all the food banks across the country. And I'm sure Patty can echo this is that the work we're doing, we need more resources for that. It's not just that we do 60% more work because we have 60% more need. The work we're doing doesn't come with a 60% increase in food donations. The resources we need go to purchasing more food to meet that need. We have to do, we need more space because we have to pack boxes now to distribute food with no contact. And that takes more space. We do it socially distanced. We need storage to store the food that we're working with. And we need more volunteers and more staff. We've here just alone, we have 15 additional temporary employees to keep up. It's a whole new way of doing business, and practically overnight we switched.
And Patty, I wanted to ask about the impact of some government policies. We had enhanced unemployment benefits for a while there. I understand there's been changes on and off in eligibility for extra food assistance, if I have this correctly. How much do those kind of changes make a difference and affect the need for food pantries?
It makes a great difference. When there's extra supports in to individuals who have been who lost their jobs or who have been furloughed, when there's extra supports like the extra unemployment benefits, et cetera, that were in place, that really, you could tell that makes a difference, because when that goes away or when there's a disruption to that, we see increases at the food pantry, and not weeks later, we see it immediately. And so when there's extra supports to communities through these programs, it does provide some relief to the hunger relief system. But while we see those numbers shifting, the sustained increase at the food pantries and at the food bank system is still big enough that we have to increase our work, our fundraising, everything that Michelle was saying, in order to keep up. This is unlike anything that we have ever seen. We know that hunger relief is a lagging recovery, so we expect this to be a long-term thing. A year from now, we will be having a slightly different conversation, but I probably will be telling you that our numbers are still elevated, because it will take a while for everything to work through the system. It's a concern that we all should be worried about, because these families are your neighbors. These are the children that go to school, and the pressure is just extreme, and stress on the families is enormous.
Talking to Patty Habeck of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin and Michelle Orgay of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. We're looking at the demand for food assistance in the state during the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you needed to use a food bank this year? Has it been the first time ever for you and your family, or is someone you know in food need themselves? Do you have questions for our guests about the need that's out there, the services that are available, and how people can help them out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Michelle Orgay of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin and Patty Habeck of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. We're talking about the pandemic and how it's expanded the need a lot for food assistance here in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions, your comments, maybe your own experiences on one side or another of food relief. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's talk, Michelle, a little bit about how, if people are interested, how they can help out. What are some of the ways people can get involved in, as you two have been saying, helping feed people in their own neighborhood?
You know, there are a lot of ways. Volunteering is something that we all need. And, you know, I'm going to also say resources, going to one of our websites. Our website is secondharvestmadison.org, and Patty will be able to share their website. But there's information about volunteering. We need people to be ambassadors to spread the word. Just when COVID's over, when there's a vaccine, when we're on the other side of this, hunger is still here, and hunger will be and food insecurity will be a bigger issue than we expected, than people might think. This is going to be a long lasting effect. But you know, our partner agencies also will need help. We aren't doing this. Food banks aren't doing this on our own. We have hundreds of partner agencies. Food banks, we have partner agencies in every county in the state of Wisconsin. And those pantries are in need of volunteers and support as well. And our food goes somewhere, and that's to those partner agencies. And so we all need help. And so helping food banks and helping partner agencies helps the people that need food. And so being an ambassador, being a volunteer, and providing resources, you know, there was an urgency in providing resources to food banks. And that's, we're starting to see that taper off a bit. I don't think people feel that urgency anymore. And you know, the holidays are coming up, but I see a bit of a tapering off of that urgency in providing resources. And I hope that people won't forget about us.
And Patty, how can people find you? Michelle shared their website.
Yes, thank you. Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin covers the eastern side. So if you're in that area, our website is www.feedingamericawi.org. That's the best way to reach us. But absolutely, please do reach out for if you have food funds or friends. That means volunteering. Financial support right now is critical, because as Michelle said, we're purchasing more food than we've ever had to before, just given the supply chain gaps and donation pauses. And then, of course, if you have food donations, if you're especially at the large scale, make sure that you're thinking about your food banks and local food pantries to make those donations.
And do you have a preference, Patty, between somebody going out and buying food and donating it to you versus just donating cash to an organization?
Right now, it is much easier for us to take cash donations, and we are able to use that scale of $1 to us means that we can buy $10 worth of groceries. So the scale is really critical right now because every dollar matters. But if there's a lot to when a person makes a donation, if they feel that they want to go out, they want to select it, they want to drop it off because they like that tangible nature, I say if you're near a Feeding America food bank or near one of your food banks, please do. But if you're near a pantry, it's equally important that you make that donation to a pantry. Right now, though, given the nature of the coronavirus, we are really strongly encouraging financial donations over food donations.
We are talking about the demand for food aid in Wisconsin and the supply of food assistance in Wisconsin. Patty Habeck is with us from Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. Michelle Orge from Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Michelle, are there things on a policy level? I assume you can't advocate for particular legislative changes, but are there things big picture that could help organizations like yours meet this need?
Well, what I will say is that we believe that that food share SNAP benefits are a really valuable part of the solution. They are helpful for families, for working families. They help children. They for every one meal that food banks provide, SNAP benefits provide 9 meals, and that might change. That proportion may change, with the pandemic, but that we are just one part. Food banks and the charitable food system is just one part of that. And the amount of meals that are provided through the school nutrition programs, through free and reduced lunch, that's huge as well. And without those happening at the same scale that they were before, we need increased participation in that while kids are out of school. There's a lot of movement with that, but there's more pressure on food banks than ever before. But the part of the solution is also is that SNAP benefit, and it's people shouldn't lose sight of that as a really valuable part of people in need getting food that they need. It helps people to stay afloat. It helps them to pay their other bills, and at a time like this, it's more valuable than ever. And we do a lot of work in Wisconsin and through our state association, Feeding Wisconsin, to help people.
We've got a caller who just wants to know, why isn't there a process set up to get some of the stuff that we're not using from farms, factories, wherever, to food pantries when times are tough? Just our last minute or so, Patty, I think there have been some pretty creative solutions there, right?
Yes, I think, in the beginning, there was, at the start of the pandemic, there was just such a confusion on how to make all of these things come together. Certainly in the weeks that followed those initial disruption to now, we have really perfected in where's the food and how can we get at it. We've been working with dairy farmers at all different levels. We've been working with farmers. We've been working with producers and manufacturers. And right now we're working on a program to get right down to those mom and pop retail stores and how we can help support them. So really what you're seeing now is where there is food available, we are working actively in partnership with other entities in the state to make sure that we're able to try to support that and get those as much as possible. So I think this is a different time, and we're really trying to help as much as possible.
We'll leave it there. Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for helping us spread the word.
Michelle Orge is president and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Patty Habeck, president and CEO of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. They join us for a look at food assistance needs around the state. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a lot of money goes into American politics. 2020, no exception. The authors of a new book dig into the world of campaign finance and what the public thinks about it. We continue our series of interviews with congressional candidates in Wisconsin with the challenger and incumbent in Western Wisconsin's 3rd District. And we use a lot of stuff in the United States. We throw a lot of it away. Guest author says we could do better. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Earlier this week, we talked about the human need for novelty and why the change of seasons this year may be more important than usual. Our guest said we can get some of that novelty during our pandemic routines by paying special attention to the changes that come with fall, big and small, from the clothes we wear to the changes of temperature, food, and outdoor colors. You shared some of your own favorite seasonal changes, and we've heard from more of you on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here are a couple of your responses. Sue writes, "It may sound dumb to a lot of people, but I enjoy raking leaves while enjoying the fresh air. Last year, I filled 53 bags from cleaning up my yard and my neighbor's yard. 50 bags the year before. It's a good way to work out and stay healthy." It doesn't sound dumb at all to me, Sue, and I've been trying to keep up with a couple maple trees in my front yard. Not going to get 53 bags out of them, though, I'm pretty sure. Cassandra writes, "Pumpkin pie, apple pie, cherry pie, putting the garden and my flowers to bed, the smell of raked leaves, mums of all colors." It's like a poem. "Leaves turning colors, the red of sumac, orange red of oaks, and the occasional red maple in people's yards. Cool walks in the evening, cuddling up by the fire. I love fall, even if it does lead into winter." You can keep sharing your favorite things about the transition to the fall season. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is the Ideas Network.